And good evening. This is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. Tonight should be a really great evening. We are talking with Joan King. Now, Joan has written some very interesting books, kind of combining science with spirituality or science with life. I think it's very interesting, the work that you've done, and I think it's, you know, for people that like the whole science thing, and there are a lot of people out there that do, your book, definitely The Code of Authentic Living Cellular Wisdom, is a book that sort of brings in a lot of science to help us sort of understand maybe our life a little bit better. I think it's really fascinating. But you also wrote a book, and we weren't probably going to get into much of it tonight, but we may have you back for another one. But it's called Cellular Wisdom for Women, and it's an inner workbook. So yes, we have lots of information to go through, and I didn't really even touch on the community section, which is the second half of the book. We're just looking at the personal stuff, but so we have lots of opportunities for other stuff. But welcome, Joan.
Oh, thank you. It's a delight to be speaking with you, Laura.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your story? How did you get involved? I mean, you're a scientist, so start from there.
Okay. So in my scientific career, most of it I spent at one institution, Tufts Medical School in Boston, where I joined the faculty in 79 and proceeded to become, from an assistant professor, an associate, a full professor, then chair of anatomy and cellular biology for the medical, dental, and vet school, and then center director for three campuses of a research facility, Boston, Medford, and Grafton. And after 5 years, I had told myself that I would pause and ask, what do I want to do now? And so I took a sabbatical, and in that sabbatical, I asked the question, who am I if you took away all the titles, all the roles, all the degrees? Who's there? Who's this woman, Joan? And I began to realize that I had been on this treadmill of achievement all of my life. And I think a lot of it was to prove to myself I was okay. You know, if you can teach chemistry and all the chemistries in college, you're okay. If you get a PhD and you can teach medical students, you're okay. If you get grants and you write papers, you're okay. And then I realized that's not a good basis to be okay. What is a better basis for me to be okay? And I began to explore what makes me okay. And I had come across this legend, which is on the back of the cover of The Code of Authentic Living. And in the cover, it talks about it as a Hindu legend. But the first time I heard it, I think it's been in many disciplines. The first time I heard it, it was the American Indian knew the white man was coming and knew that the white man would probably destroy their wisdom. So how could they protect it? And so they went through this long dissertation about, well, we could put it in the mountains. No, they'd find it there. And on and on and on until this elder of the eldest said, I know. We'll put it within. They'll never find it there. And so I thought, what if the 30-plus years I had studied cells, living cells from animals and humans, what if I had only scratched the surface? What if the cells within our own bodies were teachers of wisdom? And what would those cells tell us? And so that's why I looked for how do cells operate and allow themselves to be so magnificently thriving. And that's where titles like Living from the Inside Out, a cell lives by translating the DNA that's in that particular type of cell. So a muscle cell uses a different portion of the DNA than a nerve cell or a bone cell, because all cells have the same DNA. We came from one egg and one sperm. So how come a muscle cell operates so differently than a bone cell or a blood cell or a nerve cell? And it's because they use different portions of that DNA. But as long as the cell stays true and uses the portion of DNA that is their type, so the muscle cell uses the muscle portion and the bone cell, then they thrive. So I began thinking, well, let's look at myself. What values do I have that maybe I haven't been honoring fully? And I realized, you know, I had been in the convent when I was younger for 11 years.
Right.
Knew I needed to leave that because it wasn't working for me. I'd been in academia almost 30 years. It wasn't working for me. I had never brought my whole self together, everything that I am, to what I do. So when I was in the medical school, I really didn't bring the spiritual part of into that initiative, into that world. It wasn't really acceptable in that world. And so what I began to think is, well, I'm going to look at how my cells thrive. So if I'm going to live from the inside out, now, most people live from the outside in. That means something happens in the outer world, and that has repercussions in the inner world. So someone's disappointed by something in the outer world, now in the inner world, they become disappointed, they look for negative feelings, etc., where that's living from the outside in, and it's a very reactive way of living, and the terrible part of it means you're going to go up and down, depending upon what's going up and down in your outer world, and that's not a very happy place to be, and cells don't do that. Cells live from the inside out. So I began to say, what's important for me to live from the inside out? And I decided that it was bringing everything I am to what I do. And that's when I discovered writing allows me to do that. If somebody doesn't like my work, they just don't buy the book. But I've put it out there as a whole thing because that's my true expression of it. And I use it in coaching, and in training coaches, and in mentoring coaches, and in teaching coaches. So, and I do it in my keynotes and my workshops. So even though I do many things, I do it from one basis and one purpose and one passion, and that is to help myself and others evoke our greatness. Because I think that's why we're really here, is to discover the magnificence of who we are. And it's not dependent upon what you do and how much achievement you have or how much money you have or how you look. It's dependent upon the fact that every moment life is flowing to us. New life continually flows, like to ourselves, to keep us alive. And I think within that energy is the wisdom of all ages, the wisdom of all life. But we have to learn how to interact with it because it isn't verbal. It's pre-verbal. And we don't often pay attention to our inner world. We usually pay all this attention to the outer world and the impact it has on the inner world. But we don't look to see what's our true inner response to this or that or the other. Not shaped by our society, not shaped by what someone else thinks, but shaped by our own inner responses. Because when we have that feeling of expansiveness and freedom, and all of us have had that at one time or another, where you were in the right place, you were being who you really are, you were connecting to other people who were connecting to you, there's this amazing feeling of freedom. And it's like your spirit expands. And that's when you know you're in alignment with your true wisdom. Whereas when you are in circumstances and you feel yourself tightening up and you feel that restriction inside and you feel that, oh my gosh, I don't want to be here. It's not really in alignment with the wisdom of who you are. And so I'm hoping that through my books and through my coaching and teaching, that I'm able to help us get in touch with the greatness that's within by beginning first and understanding it's truly there. If you're alive, it's there. And you don't have to earn it. It's your birthright. And it's everyone has it. And no one has more of it than anyone else. And it isn't dependent on anything. If you're alive, it's yours.
Right. But we spend most of our time focused outside. We spend most of our time doing. We spend most of our time trying to figure out what we're passionate about, what we'd love to do, instead of just being, which is what I think you're saying. It's just
and tuning in to our inner selves. Because we are the guide. We have an internal GPS. And that is our cellular wisdom. That's that. And you know, once you start being quiet and imagining yourself doing something you're thinking of doing and paying attention to that inner response of your body and your whole being and assessing whether that's leading to freedom and expansiveness and joy, or that vision that you're creating, that movie of you doing something is causing you to tighten up. As you begin to do that more and more, you begin to be aware of your inner landscape. And most of us are unaware of our inner landscape.
Right. And what I also like is it by doing what you talk about and speak about, it is the code for authentic living. You know, we're often, you know, wearing these masks. We're often, by the way we were brought up, conditioned to believe that we're not lovable and acceptable for who we are. So therefore, we try to be somebody else, try to be something that sort of fights and resists that inner being that you speak of, which means we are not being authentic.
And you know what? When we're not being authentic, there's a sentence that was spoken by a man, Walter Russell, who lived in Boston in the late 80s and 1800s and early 1900s. And the statement, I think, is so true. It is that genius is self-bestowed and mediocrity is self-inflicted. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we're being our authentic selves, that's our genius. It isn't an Albert Einstein genius. It's the genius of being the truth of who we are. And when we put on these facades and these masks and we pretend, we are inflicting mediocrity. We can't do it well. Why? It's not us.
Yeah.
We just can't. And sooner or later, you give up because you can't.
Right.
And so the wholeness comes and the genius comes when we're being true. And that's when we can make our contribution to the world. And you know, the world needs all of our authentic contributions because no one else can make the authentic contribution one individual can make.
Hmm.
Because no one has that particular set of circumstances and values and skills and talents and passions and interests. So when we don't make our contribution because we haven't been authentic, there is a hole that will be there in the world of our not making that contribution. So when I say I'm devoted to evoking greatness, it's not so that we can sit around and look at our navels and say how great we are. It's so we can make our contribution.
Right. And so you bring in biology as the source of your wisdom. And you talk, I mean, your book is full of science. And if people are really into that, then they will really enjoy your little stories and anecdotes. Talk about the brain being plastic, because I think that is a relatively new concept.
Well, it came about in neuroscience about the time I was doing my dissertation in 1972. So it's been around for a long time, but it's now filtering into the public so that they're becoming aware of it. And I became aware of it in doing my own dissertation work because I was studying the brains of animals and looking for the effect of a certain drug. But my control group were females, and I was using an animal species that have what we call estrous cycles, similar to our menstrual cycles. And they were short. They were 4 days. But what was so surprising to me is that the brain was changing on every day of the cycle. And so I thought I would have one control group that would be all females, and it would be just any day of the cycle. And I found out that was not true, that the actual structures within the cells we call organelles, like tiny little organs in the cell, was changing over the estrous cycle. And today we know that our brains are always changing, that whenever we learn something, that means that the connections between neurons are strengthening. And so when we discover something new, if we want to anchor that new insight, it's important that we actually reflect on it and focus on it for a period of time to allow those connections between neurons called synapses to become stable. And it's usually about 21 days. And that's interesting, because how long does it take to develop a habit? About 21 days. And that's because it takes that long for the connections to stabilize.
Interesting.
And so when I'm coaching someone and they want to create something in their lives, I ask them how they focus on it. And unfortunately, what many of us do is, today I want this, tomorrow I want that, the next day I want something else, the fourth day I want something else, and there isn't a focus. We're flitting from one thing to another thing. Well, it's not surprising we aren't creating what we want. We're not allowing our focus to be sustained. Whereas if you remember when you were a teenager and you wanted something, whether it was a car or a new dress or something, you daydreamed about it, you saw yourself driving that car, or you saw yourself in that dress. And if it was a car, you'd watch cars and you'd identify the one that was like yours, or you'd identify one that was somewhat like it, but you studied it so completely that you could detect the smallest differences. It was a different model, it was a different top, it was, and the same was true with the dresses or whatever. Look at the energy that we were focusing. Well, that's the kind of energy that we want to focus on, what we want to create in our lives. And unfortunately, if some of our beliefs no longer support us and we haven't taken the time, like if my old belief that I had to accomplish in order to feel that I was okay, that dictated my life for many years, I now know that's not true. It's who I am, and if I'm being true to who I am. So I constantly ask myself, when I consider doing something, is this in alignment with who I really am? Or am I wanting this for some other reason, but I'm not really aligned with it? And then I have to say no. And that takes discipline, because all of us want to please each other.
Right.
But we have to first of all be true to ourselves, because that's when we bestow genius. That's when we can make our contribution.
Yeah. I mean, it does. It brings us right back to what I had said earlier, is that, you know, we have these conditions placed on us, so we believe that we can't be authentic because authentic isn't good enough. Because when we were children and we were authentic, you know, we were shut down. We were told, no, you can't be that excited. You know, you have to sit in your chair and you have to learn, you have to study. You know, all of the things that we were told, you know, we couldn't do. So we, you know, we would stuff them down and try and be who we thought people wanted us to be.
Exactly. And that just doesn't work.
Right.
And I think that when we come to realize that in the deepest part of our being, we are fine. We are absolutely fine. And if we could connect with that part and use it as our internal guide, as our code of authentic living, and begin to realize, let me look at the world differently. Somebody else gets all excited about something and wants us to be all excited about something. What's important for us is to go inside and say, is that true for me? Because it might be true for the other person, and it might not be true for you. And it's just such a vital connection to be in connection with our own inner wisdom. And then life becomes amazingly joyous because we're being the truth of who we are, and it becomes easier.
Yeah. You talk about, and again, this brings back into the science, but that there are dynamic principles in biology and physiology that sort of are connected to, you know, how we personally struggle in our interactions with others. Like there are things that explain how we react and respond the way we do in our physiology and our biology.
Absolutely. We have a parasympathetic and a sympathetic nervous system. And when we activate our sympathetic nervous system, that's when we get all excited, you know, the adrenaline rush. And man, the world looks wonderful, and I want to do everything, and everybody's wonderful. And that's a wonderful energy, but we were never made to stay in that energy all the time. It's like you can't drive a car by just putting your foot on the accelerator. It just doesn't work. You need that brake. Well, also, our parasympathetic nervous system is like the brake. It's the calming. It's the reflection. It's the sitting back. And so sometimes we make commitments to people when we're in that sympathetic surge. Oh, I can do everything. Sure, I'll do that. Sure, I'll do that. But we're riding the tide of the adrenaline. But what we have to realize is that we are balanced beings. And so I was just coaching someone this morning, and it was really important in coaching that person to say, you know, when someone asks you to do something, don't give an immediate response.
Mm.
Say, let me think about it. I just need a little time, and I'll be happy to get back to you. And then in that time, you can have this balance between things. And then reflect, because how many times has somebody asked you to do something and you're in the rush of the adrenaline, yeah. And then you sit back and say, oh my gosh, why did I say that? I can't even really do that. And so one of the things our bodies know is this balance. In fact, one of the things our neurons know is that they not only have to turn on and connect an electrical impulse and secrete a chemical messenger, a neurotransmitter, but they have to turn off and allow things to re-equilibrate. And in fact, the time off is usually 2 to 3 times as long as the time on. So this theme is reflected on a cellular level and on a systems level in the body. And that's when you know you've really got a solid principle. It's almost like a fractal or a theme in music that keeps repeating, that we need the on and we need the off. And we honor ourselves when we allow ourselves that balance so that we don't immediately meet somebody and make a commitment that we can't make, that we really, it isn't ours to make. We either don't have the time or it's not truly us. But because we're in the rush and we want to please, we go forward. So learning about how the body equilibrates everything and has this balance between one system and another, between a neuron that turns off and then its resting time, to allow it to have that rebalance. We need the balance.
Hmm. You talk about the blueprint and how our blueprint is really our core values and beliefs.
That's right. So, you know, when people are making decisions, we often don't take into account how that decision reflects our core values. So, for example, one of my core values is integrity. If I preserve integrity, in other words, tell truth. Now, it doesn't mean that I have to tell all my truth to everybody. It's not I go stop somebody on the street and say, oh, you've got to listen to me and blah, 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 blah. I mean, there's an appropriate time and place and appropriate people, and you don't necessarily tell all your truth to every person. But there is an appropriateness to it, and you reflect what is flowing correctly for you to be truthful. And the blueprint that is within you is that value. So if somebody said to me, oh, don't tell so-and-so such and such, my answer would be, well, I won't purposely bring it up, but if the conversation goes in that direction, I'm not going to tell an untruth. Because who's going to suffer? Literally, I'm going to suffer. Because I will have violated a core value within me, my integrity. Mm-hmm. And so when we go to make a decision, it's not just important to line up the pros and cons of more money, less travel, more time with my family, not as much, all those external things, but it's important also to say, what are my five non-negotiable values? That is, if I violate those values, I really violate who I am. I'm really destroying the blueprint that's within me. And we don't usually take time to reflect on our deep values, but we will feel the consequence of it if we violate them, because that causes a real distress deeply within our being when we violate our true principles, our values.
Right. And so by knowing yourself and your values, you then are able to discover the choices that lead you either to a sense of deep fulfillment and joy or those things that make us uncomfortable.
Absolutely. And I have exercises in the book to help you review decisions you've made in the past, both those that you value having made because they made such a contribution to your life, and those that were erroneously made and you felt bad about. And it's important to go back to what was going on inside of me to make those. Not because you want to recriminate yourself. No, 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 no. It's because you want to learn. Oh, this is how I felt inside when it was a good decision. This is how I felt inside when it wasn't a true decision for me. And learn to discriminate those interior states of being. And all of us have made decisions that have been wonderful and decisions that we wish we hadn't made. And as I say, it's not for blame that we're reviewing this. It's only to learn our own internal responses.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have new life coming to us all the time. We can change our beliefs. My goodness, I've changed my belief about I don't have to publish a book to know I'm okay. I'm publishing a book because this is something I want to say. Not because I want to know I've accomplished publishing a book the way I used to publish articles in Science, which was connected to, oh, okay, now I'm okay.
Right. Right, definitely.
And what a difference it makes, because now I love writing. Back then, I hated writing. Because I was doing it from a place of restriction. Now I'm doing it from a place of ease.
Chapter 3 talks about shaping moment by moment and
yes.
and talking about the trigger that is needed to bring about transformation.
Yes, yes. And I think I tell the story in here about my cigarette smoking.
Yes.
So I had this tiny, tiny office when I first went to Tufts as an assistant professor. I think it was maybe 8 feet by 8 feet. And this is back in the late 1979, 1980, 1981. And I was smoking at the time. And when I was writing a grant, it was a very anxiety-producing thing because you have to get enough money from your grants in order to run your lab, buy equipment, buy supplies, hire technicians, or pay for a graduate student or a postdoctoral fellow. And so it's, you know, you don't get the grant, you don't have a lab. And so I smoked more. And I can remember this one day, I opened the door to that tiny office, and it smelled with such a stench of stale smoke. And it was my signal. I said, when this grant goes off, November 1, 1981, that's the end of my smoking. Now, I was wise enough to know I don't try to stop while I'm in the midst of writing this grant because that's not the appropriate trigger. But I knew that I wanted my life to change. And so November 1, when I sent off that grant by courier to Washington, D.C., I threw away all the cigarettes. And I haven't had a cigarette since 1981, November the 1st. So there are triggers that are important. And the triggers are usually something you recognize. You identify a change you want to make. And that stench, when I opened my office, I said, I don't want to smell like this anymore. I want to make a change. But I looked for what's an appropriate trigger, because I had tried to stop smoking at least 5 times before. And I'd stop for 2 or 3 weeks and start again, and stop and start again. And I think it was because I didn't have the right trigger. I mean, it wasn't something I deeply wanted.
Right.
And I didn't make sure my timing is right. Your timing has to be right. It would have been stupid for me to try to stop in the middle of writing that grant. And I think you have to look and see what are the barriers that are going to come up that will want me to go back into my old behavior. And so, of course, the barriers are all of those circumstances when it was so easy to pull out a cigarette because everybody else was back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness not today. And so I prepared myself when I stopped. I said, what am I going to do at a cocktail party? I have a drink in one hand. Usually I'd have a cigarette in the other hand. Well, I've figured out that the price of that cigarette would be the stench eventually. And so I worked through those barriers, and I chose the signal to stop as November 1, 1981. So it's a process, and it's a process that works because it works in the body. For example, women have menstrual cycles every 28 days or so, and those are reproductive signals that come from the brain to the pituitary to the ovary. We have sleep cycles. There are neurons in the brain that synchronize with other systems to help us calm down and have sleep. And in fact, when people are deprived of sleep, the body just goes into a terrible state. There's hallucination, and there really are circumstances that are not beneficial to health when we are deprived of sleep. So these reproductive signals or these internal signals, signals are the way that the body operates. So when we want to make a change, I think it's really important to look for the signals that will support us in making that change.
Right. one of the things you mentioned is, have you suffered enough? And I know that, you know, we tend to be a society that that thinks we're supposed to suffer. I mean, as much as, you know, there are people out there that talk about, you know, affirmations and, you know, the secret and stuff, we still feel like our life, there's something about life that we think or believe or is in the collective consciousness that is about suffering.
Well, you know, I have a different attitude about challenges. And my attitude is this, and I had to use it because I had breast cancer in May. And recently, just last week, a fire was threatening our canyon, and we didn't know last Sunday if we would have a house to come back to when the fire was eventually put out. And so I understand that there are circumstances that one could identify, but we don't have to suffer. And this is why I think we don't have to suffer. All of us are more than we have experienced ourselves to be up to this point in our lives. There is more within us that can come out. And I think that the challenges are opportunities for us to bring forth more of who we are in order to meet that challenge. Rather than suffer through it and berate yourself, the thing to do is to ask yourself, what could I bring forth that maybe I haven't had much of in the past, but it is within me. All of us have this source of deep wisdom, maybe more courage, maybe more telling, maybe the ability to forgive, maybe the ability to take a risk, maybe the ability to connect with someone that's different than you. There's something more that is there, and I think the challenge is the opportunity to bring that something more forth. I got my PhD from Tulane University in New Orleans, and last year I went back and gave a talk to the Alumni Association, and I asked how many people in that room had done something they never thought they could do. And every single hand went up. And I think instead of looking at the challenge as, oh my God, I have to suffer through this, which is the thinking of our society, I think that...
Are you there?
Yes, I'm
okay.
Here. That was one of those click-offs that
yes.
I was speaking about. I think that the challenge is this opportunity to actually bring this forth. Because let's think of it. If we had no challenges in our lives, who would we be?
Yeah.
We'd probably be operating on the lowest denominator of energy expended that we could do. Well, that's not going to make us wonderful people. And it's not that the suffering is going to make us wonderful people.
Right.
That, I don't believe, is true. What will make us wonderful people is rising up to the occasion of a challenge, not denying it, not enthroning it with, this is my opportunity to suffer, because that's an old story.
Mm-hmm.
I encourage people to write a new story. And the new story is, if I have this challenge, that means there's something within me that can meet it. So what, even if I've never experienced whatever that is within me before, I can bring it forth now. I want to bring it forth now. What do I need to bring forth?
Right.
And when you do that, you will find an amazing development within yourself. And that's how I believe we recognize the magnificence of who we are. It's waiting there to be discovered and to be brought forth.
Yes, I totally agree. I think we're such a victim mentality society that we prefer to believe somebody else has done it than to accept responsibility, and we prefer to think that someone's done something to us instead of just realizing that, you know, they've done something to themselves. You just happen to, you possibly might be in the middle of it, but it's your choices and your actions that you take that will decide whether you suffer or whether you see it as a challenge that assists you to grow, which is essential for all of us.
That's correct. And that's what brings the fulfillment. Can you imagine doing something you never thought you could do? Hmm. Oh, my God, the feeling is incredible. One of the things I did when I knew I would be leaving academia, and knowing that the only thing I had ever known was being in academia, and I had no idea of what I would do, and I knew that I needed a symbol to allow me to recognize I was going to be okay. Now, I'm afraid of heights, and I don't know how to swim, because my cousins, who knew how to swim very well, would always sit on me or tease me, or I never learned how to swim. So I decided, my husband and I were in Europe, we were giving talks at two different places, and we happened to be at Talois in France, close to Lake Annecy. And I heard people in the place we were staying talking about parasailing. And I said to my husband, I want to do that. And he said, what did you do with my wife? She's afraid of heights and over Lake Annecy? So I said, no, I want to do this. I want to do something I've never done before to let me know that I'm going to be okay.
And we're back.
It's one of those breaks again. Sorry about that.
That's okay. It's just great that you keep coming back to us.
Yes. So I found out where the parasailing place was on the top of the mountain, and you had to run and jump off the mountain.
Wow.
And sail over Lake Annecy and land on the shore. And so what gave me the courage to do it was that behind me was tethered someone who would know how to handle an emergency situation. If the winds got whipped up in the wrong direction, so that gave me confidence that I had an expert. But he was behind me.
Mm-hmm.
I still had to run and jump off the mountain without being tethered to a boat or anything else. And as I did it, as I ran and jumped off the mountain, and the parasail opened, huge parasail, I screamed, ooh la la, to the top of my voice. And I really, as I felt the air fill those sails, it was like I knew I was going to be okay. I knew. And I didn't know anything more than before I jumped off that mountain. I did not know what I would do, who I would be, what profession I'd be in or anything. But somehow having done that gave me the conviction that I would be supported in finding my right work. And then I discovered writing and speaking and coaching.
Hmm. Let's talk about Chapter 5, because I think it's
yes.
an important one in understanding. So it's about tapping into a renewal, but it's about understanding our addictions. And, you know, I think that we are an addicted society, where if it's not drugs and alcohol, then it's, you know, as you talk about the drive for success,
right.
our unhealthy habit with eating, gambling,
yep.
risk taking. I mean, it's all there. Or
working,
yep. or addicted to giving to other people, addicted
yes.
more than ourselves.
Right. Exactly. Yes. So the first thing that has to happen is for us to understand life is constantly coming to us new. You know, life looks continuous to us, so we keep reinventing our dysfunctions. Every time new life comes to us, we keep reinventing. And until something happens, either your family falls apart or you get sick or something terrible happens, usually it takes something really bad to happen to wake us up. Oh, my God, look at where I am. You know, I've lost my wife. I've lost my children. Look, I'm alone. Look at where I am. And then comes the conviction, and this is the really important piece. I don't want to live like that anymore. Now, we shouldn't have to wait until we get to the bottom of something and it is irreversible. We've lost our family and we've lost our wife and our children. But learning when our interior world is telling us this isn't right. And, you know, no matter how addicted we are, when we are addicted, like when I was addicted to success, I didn't want to listen to the part of me that was saying, this isn't right. So what did I do? I worked harder, got more successes. Until eventually I stopped and said, let me look at who I am. And I think one way to not be caught in this web of addiction is to get familiar with your internal world. And allow, when you feel something is not right, don't keep doing it. Stop and look and say, what isn't right? What am I violating in myself? Because you are. I mean, I was violating, with my addiction to success, I was violating my own greatness within me. I was saying, I can't be great unless I accomplish. And that's just not true. All of us have greatness within us because we're alive. So learning how to recognize when something is wrong, when it's out of control. And I have in here a little personal dysfunction questionnaire that you can ask questions like that to prompt you to get into that feeling. And usually we're in circumstances that promote that dysfunction. So, of course, I was surrounded by a lot of people who were addicted to success as well as me. Now, I control my own business. I decide who I am connected with. And I'm not connected to people who are addicted to success. So sometimes we have to look at the circumstances that supports our dysfunction and look to see, does this happen more when I'm around those people? Do I drink more around those people? Do I smoke more? Do I take drugs when I'm around those people? That's when you start to realize if you want a new story in your life, there may be the need to change some of the outer circumstances and maybe to have some intervention if it's really gotten too far. And it means giving up some of those circumstances and those people. Because if it supports your dysfunction, it's supporting your destruction of yourself at some very deep level. And then you have to ask, are you ready to make a change? Do you want a new story? And, you know, I think most of us really do, but we're scared.
Mm-hmm.
We're scared. Okay, I'm back.
Oh, good.
But we're afraid to. And one of the things to understand is that one of the things the body teaches us is that connections are important to cells. Cells that are not connected to each other die. So red blood cells are the only cells in our body that aren't connected to each other. And every 90 days, they die. And so we don't have to do this alone. If we want to make a radical change in our lives, find other people who are doing what you want to do, or people who will surround you with supporting energy. Don't stay with the dysfunctional groups because it'll just promote you in destroying yourself. Reach out for those people who can support you in the change that you want to make. And, you know, it might mean a really drastic change in your life. It might mean changing a job. It might mean changing a city. It might mean changing a spouse. It might mean changing friends. But aren't you worth it? I mean, you are the reason you're alive, not your dysfunction. And the dysfunction is only destroying you. And so recovering our lives and transcending dysfunction, I have in here a piece about how to go about transcending dysfunction and getting past it by asking yourself how you can alter relationships that you have, or how can you forge new relationships to help you, or how can you envision yourself as who you would like to be, and absolutely connect with the people that can support you. It's not like if that means that you're in deficit. It just means we are meant to be connected to each other. And some of us have certain strengths, and others of us have different strengths. And when you want to make a change, you want to connect with the people that have the strengths in the areas you don't. And it doesn't mean, poor me, I don't have it. It means I'm meant to be. It means, are you back?
Uh-huh.
Okay. It means we're meant to be connected to someone who does have that strength.
Yeah.
And that is not a bad thing. That is not something to tear ourselves up about. The body teaches us that's how to thrive. So if we want to thrive, connecting with others to help us is a deficiency in our part. It's smart. Tapping into renewal.
Right. Yeah.
And renewal is always there because life is always coming to us fresh.
Hmm.
And just because we don't see it, we think that doesn't happen. But if it wasn't, if for one moment that flow of life would stop, we would cease to be. And I don't know how many people listening have been with someone who's died. I had the privilege of being with my mother, in that there's that moment when she's alive, in that moment when life withdrew, that there was no more life.
Mm-hmm.
So it really does flow to us moment by moment, new and fresh. We have fresh resources all the time.
You also talk in that chapter about reaching out to others, about looking at the tags that guide our connections.
Yes.
It's kind of a different wording, yes.
And that's the way neurons find each other.
Right.
There are chemicals that one neuron will have a receptor for and the other neuron will be secreting. So the one that has the receptor will be in actual development. You can watch the cell grow and you can watch the end of it move through the brain actually looking for a match. And so we look for, you know, what are the tags that are important to us? And when you look, I ask you in here to kind of draw a tree of your relationships. And when you draw the tree of your relationships, you look to see, you know, what kind of relationships are on that branch. What kind of relationships are on that branch? And do you have a big and full tree? Or is your tree like two branches, your family and this one set of friends in the neighborhood? Well, you know, what you're doing there is you're limiting your resources. And so if you reach out to people maybe in other, maybe join groups of an interest that you have, a sporting interest or a recreational interest or a learning interest or a travel interest, you start to broaden the shape of your tree and have many more branches. Well, now you have more resources and you can connect with people and find relationships that maybe are even more meaningful than the ones that you currently are enjoying. And that's not to say that the current ones are insufficient. I mean, we don't look at a tree that only that has tons of branches and says, oh, well, that tree would be better with just two branches. Of course not. So this gives us a broader perspective. It also allows us to find new venues of what's fulfilling. It might be a book club. It might be listening to books on tape and sharing them and discussing them with other people. And it so you, I have a little exercise here for looking at your tags. What are your tags? What are your interesting ways, your inequalities, your personal traits, your interests? If you want to develop courage, what group of people would you want to connect with who have courage? You know, maybe it's somebody in a sporting event, or maybe it's somebody who's learning something new, because it takes courage to learn something new. Mm-hmm. And so you start to recognize, oh, I can broaden my connections. And making new connections takes a certain energy. I mean, you might invite over people you never thought of having in your home, but they would add an interesting element of something different. Sure, it takes a little bit of courage to do that, but, you know, it's, and even the people that you currently know, you probably only know them in a certain light. I mean, maybe you play cards with them every Thursday night, but maybe what you haven't recognized is they love art, or they love music, or broaden the connection that you have with the ones you're already connected to into new and exciting venues. Because, again, this not only brings the possibility of more fulfillment into your life, but it also allows you to see how many more resources there are around you.
Well, Jim,
the life can be fuller.
That's true.
Yes.
This has been a wonderful interview. I think there is so much more that we could have discussed. I'm so pleased that you were able to open up during your snowstorm to talk to us, which is kind of funny because it's April 14th, and didn't you just say there was a fire the weekend before? So
that's correct. That's correct.
We are going through extreme weather conditions, obviously.
Obviously, yes.
But there's a second part.
In the midst of it, by the way, I just want to mention this. The challenge to me was to stay centered.
Mm.
Because when I was driving out at 3:30 in the morning last Sunday, and I could see the glow of the fire behind our neighbor's house, and I had two cats in the car with me who were howling, I kept saying, we will be protected, all is well. And that allowed me to stay calm, to stay centered, and to stay that way throughout the day when I didn't know if we'd have a home or not.
Yeah.
And I think I feel even more centered now having gone through that experience.
Yeah. Yes, the challenges and how we live through them, the choices we make to allow us to expand or devolve, I guess.
Exactly. Exactly. Hmm. Thank you so much. I've so enjoyed speaking with you.
Mm-hmm. How can people get a hold of you? But before we do that, I mean, there is a whole other section that we did not get to in the Code of Authentic Living,
yes,
Cellular Wisdom, which is, you know, living expansively in community. So we touch about it in the personal, which is reaching out to others, but then there's a whole section on how to, you know, how to create community and why that's so important in our evolution.
Right, and living expansively in that place.
Right.
Because most of us feel we have to make ourselves into what other people want, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I have a new book that's coming out. It just went to press, and it's called A Life on Purpose, Wisdom at Work.
Nice.
And my website, I have a lot of free material on my website. I also send out a free Jolt of Joan every Sunday or Monday, which is a 2-minute audio recording.
Nice.
Just to remind you of your greatness and to remind you to stay on the path of living from your true code.
Yes.
And being authentic. And you can either email me at joankingcoach no punctuation, all lowercase, Joan King, J-O-A-N-K-I-N-G, at cellular, C-E-L-L-U-L-A-R, hyphen, wisdom.com. And on my website are videos and recordings from radio shows and 4 hours of free teleseminars. Nice. And articles and my blog. So there is a lot of free material on my website, which is www.cellular-wisdom.com. Please take advantage of it. It's there for you.
Nice. Well, what a pleasure, and I look forward to connecting with you again. Maybe we'll do your new book.
I'd love to do that.
All right. Well, take care, and, you know, appreciate the snowstorm in the midst of what should be our spring.
Exactly. And by the way, the snow is now diminishing.
Oh, okay, good.
Thank you so much again, Laura.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.